15 to 20 million
jobs.
I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area. As always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in as we continue to grow our family of supporters of the Made in America movement. Now, if you received an email this morning, which I know that over 20,000 people received that, if you would just send it off to your family and friends, that will help us to get new people into the system. I'm very pleased to say that all of our panel members are here with us today, and I want you to take a look at them yourself. You can go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and you'll see the four people that often have so much to say during our regular broadcast, along with our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. And I want to thank Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, a man who has made history, a man I'm so proud to know. Mark, I thank you for all that you do to help us support our movement. Also, Larkin Connolly, the East Coast Vice President of SCORE. This is another gentleman, many opinions. I love to hear from you. I know that you've done an enormous amount of work for SCORE. You enjoy life, and we miss you not being here with us that often in Philadelphia. And Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Wow, what a guy. I'm telling you, Rich, you were missed last week on your travel. So I'm happy that you're here with us today. And Rich is another one who has a lot of good things to say, and people like that. And, you know, people tell me they like listening in. It sounds like a couple of people talking about their, you know, own issues and thoughts on at some kitchen table. And I say I really like that thought. So thank you. And Henry, as always, thank you for making sure everything goes out the way it should be. He's an engineer of engineers. I don't know where he got that from, but thank you, Henry, because he's laughing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as we get together on this Wednesday, December the 7th, we're marking the 75th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor by Japan, which, of course, as you know, began the involvement of the United States of America in World War II, an attack that President Roosevelt said is a date that will live in infamy. And boy, I am so happy to see what I saw this morning, many, many news reports that it's an event that we have to keep in our hearts and minds and honor all those who served. And as we continue to make things happen in the world, make the world better, so to speak, we have to honor all those who worked so hard, volunteered, who were called up for duty, and were at that time and the present day soldiers and veterans too. We want to thank them. I know that there are many major events taking place to mark the 75th anniversary at United States military locations, and I certainly feel that it's important that all of you check out the news this evening to see exactly how this date was celebrated. Before I continue and go to the panel for all of their welcome notes, I want to just say 2016 is also marking another historic time in American history as Donald Trump, a non-politician, was elected the 45th president of the United States of America. You know, in most cases, people voted for a businessman they felt would improve the business climate in America and restore job opportunities, which is what we are all about. Many of you will remember that 3 years ago, I said, we need a businessman as a president, a person who knows what it takes to run a business and then use that business experience to make up actual budgets, not budgets that don't balance and budgets that puts America in debt. So as we all agreed, the election is now history. And we have to remember one more thing. It took Republicans, Democrats, independent voters to elect the first non-politician who said that he will work hard with national leaders to do his very best to improve the job situation in America and make America great again. With that, I am going to ask Rich for opening remarks. Dr. Loges.
Good morning, guys. Good morning to everyone and our listeners and to our veterans who served in World War II. You know, guys, I have down here in Florida, there's a gentleman in my building who was in the actual D-Day. And before this election, I always liked the perspective, to get the perspective of those who were from that era. And, you know, those men and women, guys, those were tough dudes and tough women who served back then. And it takes sometimes, Michael, a while for, I think, people to gain a historic perspective. And one of the things that the veterans would say to me, which I found to be quite interesting but sort of equally unnerving, many of the veterans, Michael, whom I would speak to on a regular basis, would say to me that they felt that some of the things that they had fought wars against, that they had witnessed growing up post-World War II, that they felt some of those things were happening on a somewhat softer scale here in the U.S. And I got to thinking about that a lot before the election. And, you know, Michael, think about those guys. They've got some credibility, right, when it comes to this issue. People in my building who fled Eastern Europe in World War II. One gentleman whose parents died in the Holocaust, and he fled Hungary when he was 14 years old, came to this country. You know, he said some of the similar things. And then I got to thinking about this as I was going to say this today. I got to thinking about what you guys were talking about last week, and especially what Larkin, some of the things that Larkin brought up. And, you know, I want to reiterate this point, Michael, if I may, that, you know, in the Congress now, there are, we have a Republican majority, and there are also Democrats who were elected in their states and districts. But I just think if the Democratic Party wants to be taken seriously, have credibility at the table, they've got to recalibrate and rebrand their product and their offering, because they're simply not going to last very long when their platform is that anyone who disagrees with them is a bigot and a white supremacist and a sexist and a racist. You know, all this same crap that we heard for over a year in the election. And in the Democratic Party right now, Michael, the celebrities are making the most sense amongst them. This, when the celebrities are your voice of reason, you've really gone off the rails. So I'm not putting words in Larkin's mouth, but I was thinking a lot about what Larkin said last week. And, you know, we had an election where there were two distinct candidates, in my opinion, albeit the one who got elected, sure, was flawed and imperfect. But one candidate got elected because of a grassroots level of people doing individually perhaps a little bit, but combined was a big effort. And then the other candidate was one who was basically a queen in waiting. And here in the United States, we don't believe in monarchies.
Well said. So you're right.
More to be said about this, but I just want to give a shout out to all of our vets, and especially the ones in my building who are listening, who served in World War II, post-World War II.
You know, I have to tell you, talking about how the Internet has made us a big family, you know, coming out of one little broadcast, facility, people from Florida. I get some people from Florida, too, and people from Texas, the Carolinas, tell me that they tune in. Many of these are people who lived in the Philadelphia area, were familiar with our daily broadcasts here on 860, and they now are internet people, and they love our message.
Michael, can I make one last point?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is not going to be a very nice point, and I'm going to make this point. There are people, and you know who you are right now as I mention this, there are people who listen to us in New York. Your viewpoints are welcome. Your listenership is appreciated. But there are people in New York whom I believe are listening right now who send all kinds of not-so-nice messages to us. My invitation to all of you who send those messages, because it's very easy to criticize from a big mansion in a big fancy community in a big fancy living room on your $5,000 cell phone. Give us a call. Come on the show. You're welcome. We welcome different viewpoints here. Listenerships are appreciated, Michael, irrespective of political beliefs. But we've got some people who send some messages that, you know, aren't exactly the nicest messages. So I'm going to just offer a nice little challenge here that those who send those messages, give us a call. Put the phone number out, Michael. You guys can call us at any time because we like to have nice civil debate here. So I just want to make that point also, trying to be nice about this point, Michael. We've got a lot of great listeners, and everyone's welcome, but there are some who sent us messages, and you know what?
You know what, Rich? I love those messages because it tells us that people are listening, and they give up me ideas, and it makes me understand how much work we all have to do to get everybody working on the same sheet of music. But it will happen if we put those differences aside and just say we have to work for the good of one movement, and that is America. America, America, America. With that, I'm going to ask very good Mark Handel. Mark, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you, Mike?
Wonderful.
Hopefully Larkin's there. But now, Rich, again, you know, thank you for bringing up, and Mike, you know, the 75th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack that drew us into the war, and it means a lot to me today. It was nice to see it on the news and respected, and, you know, especially, like Rich had said, you know, honoring all these World War II vets that were a tough, tough generation, and I meet a lot of them at the Made in America store, and I've got a lot of good friends. Eugene Kraft is 93, and you know, he was in our grand opening video, and we dedicated that Iwo Jima sculpture to him. But you know, also we just tied Mike and Rich with the World War II Museum in Eldred, PA, which is very neat because it's on the border of New York and PA, but it is in Pennsylvania. It's a beautiful World War II museum. We just set up our store, and we just launched it today with a press release on the 75th anniversary, which is kind of neat, not by design. And it's our first store in Pennsylvania, too, guys. So, Mike, I think that's pretty neat. We never really thought about it, but it's about four fixtures having the 100% Made in America product on it. But this this World War II museum in Eldred, PA, the women back before World War II made munitions. It was a munitions plant. They made ammunition and whatnot for Britain. And when I hear the story, and the Steve Appleby that runs this museum, he himself was a Special Forces for 18 years, and then he trained our Special Forces in the Army. Just to go there in the last weeks and hear his stories and how he narrates, and the museum's like Walt Disney World style. But I just wanted to put a little, it's neat that these museums are still there. When I walked through and he told the stories of what these guys and that American can-do spirit they had is just unbelievable back in that day. They really made this country what it is. So, you know, again, hats off to all the veterans, but especially the World War II veterans.
You know, you're right, Mark. And these are the people who looked to work, to be part of the American way, to defend our country. The American people became too soft in the last 30 years. They waited for some magic miracle to happen, which never was going to happen. In fact, 75 years ago, America didn't have a penny of debt. Today, as I look at the debt clock, we're $19,993 billion in debt, which means, Henry, for the record, every one of the people in your house, all your kids, are in debt to the government for $61,322. And that, you know, in order for us to wipe the debt clean, that means everybody in America would have to write a check to this treasury with the amount of $61,322. Is that leadership? That's the problem. Larkin?
Good morning. Good morning, Henry. You know, I enjoy listening to Rich when he agrees with me. That really tickles me pink. And he does, and we do agree most of the time. We like to kid each other. But as I was listening to Rich, another thought came to my mind, and that is 3 months ago, I was listening as a recovering – I'm a recovering Republican. As a recovering Republican, I was listening to the press and newspapers, everybody in the country talking about this election was in fact going to bury the Republican Party. We were done. We were finished. How were we going to rebuild the party? How were we going to remake ourselves? And with one election, that seems to have taken on a completely new look. We have the balances of state houses across the country. I believe we have 34 or 35 governors. We have plurality in the House and in Senate, and we have the executive branch now. You know, when we talk about all of this control, it makes me just as nervous as having a loyal opposition. We're under the gun. We need to do some correct things, and we need to get them done. If you all remember, the only thing that the previous administration got done, the entire 2.5 years that they had complete control of the House and the Senate and the executive branch, was a health care bill that was written by the majority leader of the House and nobody read. But they got it passed. We've got to be, this country has got to be, and the Republican Party has to be a little bit more diligent than that in completing all of the repairs and the correcting misdirections and all of the rest of the things that need to be done. So far, I'm somewhat impressed with a Trump. I wish somebody take his cell phone away from him. I think that would make things a little bit easier. He's not going to be a conventional president. He's not going to have a lot of press conferences. He knows what he's doing, and the people around him know what he's trying to get accomplished. And I think the press conferences will be few and far between, which will make the press get a little bit more inventive. But in all of this that I've been watching over the last 3 weeks, I'm really a little bit annoyed also with this alt-right. I don't know who they are. I don't know where they're organized. I don't know who their leader is. But everything that they say and everything that they stand for absolutely revolts me. And I hope Trump continues to disavow them and to absolutely give them zero voice in this administration. The last thing I'll say is, Rich, Mark, Michael, everybody get ready. Henry, get mentally, emotionally, and physically prepared to hear my Christmas list next week.
Oh.
It's going to take a lot of starch out of your sails, but it's going to add a lot of fuel to your fire.
Oh, very good. I love it, Larkin.
Yeah, I think I better start drinking early for that.
And you know what? I think I would like to hear Larkin's list, and how about a few add-ons from Mark and from Rich. I'd like to hear what each one of them would like to see. I know that this year is going to be the beginning of a change in America like we have never seen. People see what the president-elect has been doing in recent days, and they tell me, well, the new president is going to be asked a lot of questions, and he's not going to take a lot of nonsense, because a businessman who's trying to run a business can't do it losing money. They have to make money. And people want to see him ask questions about where those trade deals could end, where they could be improved, what has to be done. People want to know. And by the way, more than ever, everywhere I go, and this week, Saturday, we have up to 200 people coming to events. And on Sunday, I have a special dinner with 400 people coming. People are talking about the American-made label. So this year, we're going to ask all of you to support our special 2017 theme, which is going to be very brief. Support American workers and the Made in America label.
Mike, you know, like to that end, Michael, I wanted to mention, and I'm interested in hearing Mark's reaction to this. I hope he wasn't so busy yesterday that he missed it. But David Muir, tis the season for David to return to the Made in America segment on ABC News. Couple that with the fact that I switched from another network that just finally revolted me, and I'm trying ABC now. And sure enough, David did an interview yesterday from the Lazy Boy factory, and the fact that totally sourced, those Lazy Boy recliners are made in America. They're built one at a time by workers, and the film of the factory and all of the points that were made by the current CEO and president and the founders, they're dedicated to making great functioning furniture in this country. They're doing a heck of a job. Did you get a chance to see that, Mark?
Yeah, that's funny, Larkin. That's what I was going to talk about, too. Great to see it. It was Monday night. I actually ended up recording it. I'll send it to you guys. It was awesome because, you know, we started in New York City. It was the first night Made in America's back. And, Mike, I know you followed it, too. But 75, you know, Lazy Boy's been around. There's five factories. They're out of Michigan. And there's 7,500 employees. They even went through in that, Lark, and it was beautiful, where they said where the steel's from and the wood's from Mississippi. Every part they broke down. So for me, it's interesting, and maybe I can sell a piece of furniture. To know that the company's so strong was awesome. And then also, we're tweeting David Muir because we want to get back on again. If it's the grill as a gift, and we got 7,000 Christmas presents for people. So world news, hats off to, because that was a nice segment. But Lazy Boy Furniture, hats off to. 7,500 employees are responsible for. And, you know, it's Made in America season. There's 17 days to Christmas, and, boy, are we rocking and rolling up here with the stores. And the weather's been right. I put my order for snow in, though, talked to Mother Nature, and we got a snowstorm coming the next 4 days.
How is it? Weather up there now?
Weather right now is probably 40 degrees, just cloudy, but we got a snowstorm coming tonight starting lake effect squalls right through Saturday. So we're good for 6 inches to 2 feet. Nobody believes we get feet, you know, because we got that Lake Erie snowmaking machine here.
Yeah, I keep hearing that there's going to be a tremendous amount of snow up that way. So,
yeah, and that's
you know, Mark, what David Muir was doing, he was, you know, put on the carpet some time ago. Because some of the manufacturers, talking about Lazy Boy, there were at one point people trying to get them to move Lazy Boy or a portion of Lazy Boy manufacturing to Mexico. That didn't happen. So that all of this really is going to go well into the 2017 theme, Support American Workers and the Made in America label. I think we're going to get a lot of run on this one because, as I said, as I go around, people say, can you believe we don't even have 50% of what we have available in our stores that's made in America? I look at the tags. I bypass it. People are not buying what they did in the past at the stores, and the stores are so overwhelmed with stock, nobody would believe it.
Yeah, and, you know, this time of year is just the retail people have to have. It was 30 days between Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, till Christmas Eve. And it's just so important for the economy and retail and people going out. But when you educate them to buy Made in America and what it happens, we just had a surprise bus yesterday. And when these people know, they don't know we have nothing that plugs in, that nothing that takes a battery. When you keep educating them, they believe in this. And with what Donald, you know, our President Trump has going on now and saving the jobs at Carrier and talking to the Japanese, he's doing more. Like your Larkin, your old Christmas list, I'm sure I think Jobs was either number one or two, and that's all I'm hearing about, and I love it.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing about the resistance that President-elect Trump is getting right now, I thought, you know, these people are really afraid to allow an outsider to run the country, a businessman. And I've come to the conclusion that it has absolutely nothing to do with that at all. These are all people in Washington and press people who are supported by Washington and entertainers and all the rest of that stuff, who are deathly afraid of what the end result is going to be. It is going to shake up Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, he says he's going to drain the swamp. It's kind of a negative way of looking at his mission. But nonetheless, he talks constantly about changes that he's going to make. And if he starts talking term limits early on in his administration, there are going to be a lot of people in Washington that are going to need ammonia AV or whatever that because it's you know, they're going to be worried. They're really, really, really going to be worried.
Even when he brought up he's talking with Boeing aircraft and they picked on him, like you said, and a lady a long time ago, one of my first interviews said, Mark, if you're saving babies from being thrown over a bridge, somebody's going to have a problem with it. And Larkin, it reminds me of what I'm hearing with Trump. He calls Boeing. He's negotiating. If he thinks the plane's too expensive, he's not going to buy it. He's negotiating. He's a businessman. You price out things. You look for quality, but you get the best price. You don't just pay them. And I think he's doing that, and it's point on right now.
Well, I think, you know, a report came out yesterday. I don't know if you saw that on the evening news. I saw it on the later news. But it said that in America, we often have only one company bidding for various things in the government is purchasing. They just got so used to supplying that somebody's going to pay the bill, whatever they throw down. I think Trump is, as a businessman, as any businessman, you're looking at every item to make sure that the bag and the staple in the product is American-made. Mark, I think a businessman has to go in there and say, we need three quotes, no less than three quotes. Two quotes, three quotes is better before we make a decision. That will trim a lot of the waste. They're talking about the $1 billion for this and $1 billion extra for that. $1 billion is a lot of money. You don't find that on a street. Oh, it was overpriced by $1 billion. What? How can you just like puff it off? So we're going to see something. And by the way, everywhere I go, people now agree with the term limits. They say without hesitation, there's been a lack of leadership from the top down for 30 years, and now we want to make up for lost time. We have to make up for lost time. And Mark and Larkin and Rich, your voices are very important. I know that people have this and that to say about all of us. God bless them. There's always airwaves. Get a license, register, go to a station, buy some time, and put your air time on there with your opinions. We do positive things. People are telling me, Michael, what Trump and the national leadership is out to do now is not going to be easy. It's going to take 4, 6, maybe even 10 years to get America back to where it should be. But we must move forward this time around or we're done. And
Michael,
I agree with that.
Can I make a point about that? And I want to share this with you guys. And I had texted it briefly, but a couple weeks ago, someone had said to me that she changed her vote because of listening to this show. And I said, it wasn't me. I'm not guilty. And we got to talking about it. And she was going to vote for the Democratic nominee, but changed her mind and voted for the Republican nominee, president-elect. So I asked, you know, Michael, I said, why, do you mind if I ask, why did you change your vote? And what she said to me was that she listened to the information and the facts on this show and really couldn't dispute the facts. And so for that reason, we helped, we did our part, right? It, again, a lot of people doing a little. Classic sports analogy. You know, some do more than others, but mostly it's a bunch of people doing a little bit. And I always say this, Michael, I always use this example, and I know that the statistical likelihood is zero of this, but What if this person was the tie-breaking vote in the national election? Think about that for a second. What if that person was the tiebreaker of a vote in a national election, and we, you guys, influenced the outcome that
way?
That's pretty powerful. You think about that. And I say that to people all the time when people say, what's the difference? Why talk to 5 people or 10 people? I mean, I had 40-something people who pledged to me verbally they were going to get registered to vote. The security guard, one of the security guards, Mark, in my condo, I kept asking, you registered? Walking to the car the week before Election Day, he chased me down in the car to show me his voter registration card. What if he'd been the deciding vote in the election?
That's right.
You know, you think about that. That's a powerful thing, and a lot of people doing a little bit. So we're gonna, you know, we're doing our part, and I'm gonna pledge and promise as we enter the new year that if you thought I was really nutty before, just get ready. And one other point that I want to say, guys, and I took the liberty of speaking for everyone on the show. I hope that's okay. I don't like to do that, but what I said to a few people in the last few weeks was, I think that it's, you know, it's probably very clear from the show that we certainly weren't Hillary Clinton supporters and most likely were voters or leaning toward the president-elect. But my pledge to people was that we were not going to be a show of Donald Trump sycophants, that this is not, so he can do no wrong. You know, he's the Messiah. He's a political savior. That's what the left believes. That's not what really, you know, we don't believe that, right, because we think the smaller the government, the better. So my pledge to our listeners entering into the new year is this is not a show where the president-elect can do no wrong. Now, in fairness, Michael, every president, Donald Trump included, as he enters this position, every president needs to be afforded a certain margin of error. Every president inherits the bad stuff from the last guy. However, I do think, fair or unfair to Donald Trump, his margin of error is a little bit smaller than prior presidents. He's inheriting in some places, not all, but in some places, he's inheriting a really big mess.
That's right.
He's inheriting some big messes. I mean, healthcare is you know, Obamacare is going to would just collapse under its own weight if it's not fixed. And I'm hearing some very positive things, Larkin, from the Congress. I'm hearing positive things. You know, our borders are porous. I don't think we really realize quite how porous they are. I think that we can continue having a generosity toward the world, but we need to not do that at the expense of our sovereignty. The reason that people flee where they live to come to our country, Michael, is because we are a sovereign nation that treasures personal liberty, our Constitution, and free enterprise. And we've gotten away from that. You know, you mentioned the 30-year mark. You always mentioned 30 years. We've progressively moved away from that. And because of the strength of our country, we will recover from it. You know, we will recover from that. But the president-elect needs to be afforded a margin of error. Granted, it's not as large as it's been for other presidents. But, you know, I got to say one thing, though, Michael. I think that there's going to be times that we're not going to agree with decisions. We're going to scratch our heads. But I am optimistic, and I have some relative high degree of confidence that I think the president-elect is going to get some things done that are going to have a measurable, tangible, positive impact. I do think that.
Rich, I want to tell you I agree. And here is something that I want to just add to that statement. Because of the brutality that went on during the election process, I really think that we are going to see the curtains pulled back. The Wizard of Oz, the guy behind the curtains, is all of a sudden going to be shown for who he is. We're going to see things happening in the country that we have been begging to see. We're going to see them because this man is going to go to Twitter. He will go to his own YouTube channel, if necessary, to put the points across. The days of just giving stuff away, political appointments out the wazoo, I think are going to be done. That's finished.
It,
you know, Mike, Larkin, you mentioned and maybe a little older school with the texting and the, you know, the tweeting and the Instagram. What a lot of people don't understand, and Rich, this is kind of your area, my two IT guys or three IT people, and it's so fast. This new world is about speed. Even if a customer's on an iPhone, they don't go home and open up their phone book no more and go get a part. It's speed. But what Donald Trump does with that, and it's hard and it definitely has to be controlled, but the speed that he reaches 40 million people with is incredible. So that's something different, guys, that we've never had from a president, reaching Americans and people instantly.
And he's not afraid to say what's on his mind. And I can see the people in Washington, both the Republicans and the Democrats, don't want to shake the tree because he's liable to knock the apples on their heads. And this is something I'm glad that we see. Everywhere I go, even if people didn't vote for Trump, they tell me, I'm going to give this man a chance. I like what he's doing. I like who he's appointing. And by the way, working in social services, we work with people who want jobs, who want stability, who are suffering with age-related difficulties and things like that. There's so much poverty in America, listeners, as a result of over 70,000 well-established American-based businesses moving out of America. Mark, you can tell us. Go 10 miles from your store and see how many facilities have been downsized or closed. You alone are, you can give us a full treatment about that. And I know without question, one way to lower poverty in America is to restore jobs and job skills for working age and able-bodied people.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, you know, Michael, it's got to be one step further than that. And I think they need to be family supportive jobs. $7.50 an hour it's not even probably halfway to a livable wage. So in some way, shape, or form, we have to provide work. We have to provide sustenance that will allow a man very proudly to be the head of the household, to, you know, this is where all these broken families come from. How many men do you know that like to come home without a job or never leave the house, send his kids to school and maybe his wife to a minimum wage job, and he has to sit at home because he can't find work? It's the core value that's missing in keeping the family together. It's educational issues. I mean, it's just about everything.
And Larkin, and you're right. And can anybody explain how we could have allowed our educational system in America to drop to where it is today?
Well, I think there's probably probably five or six reasons why it's happened, and the argument comes with, you know, who's in the first position? Is it the government that did not afford enough money to provide education? Is it the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., who can't for the life of them, and it's totally impossible to even try, come up with a blanket program that represents qualified education in all 290,000 school districts in the country? They're trying to do this cookie-cutter thing, and it just doesn't work. Education belongs in the state. We all know that.
Every state is different. You're right. Absolutely right.
It needs to be. It's a local issue. Philadelphia should concern themselves with their own problems. But as you look at Philadelphia, they pour money in it. I mean, they invent taxes now, soda taxes, cigarette taxes, blah, 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 all the stuff. It just pours more money, and more money into the Philadelphia school district, and they're still behind the eight ball.
You're right. Larkin, gentlemen, and all of the listeners, let's talk about this for 1 second before I have to acknowledge some of our advertisers. Larkin, you know that from being in Philadelphia for a long time, at one time, Philadelphia had 423,000 manufacturing jobs. Today, they have 25,000 manufacturing jobs.
stiff
how
neck.
Could that how could that have happened? You know, if you lost 20,000 jobs, you would think that the leadership of the city and the state and all would be concerned and say, hey, we lost 20,000 jobs. Did you realize that 25,000 more people are unemployment bound now? And then when it went to 50,000, they should have said, well, wait a minute, there's now 50,000 extra people. When it went to 100,000, no. What they did, instead of acknowledging that we were losing our jobs and they were going abroad, they invented more programs, cash assistance, benefit this, benefit that. Being in social services, that's not the purpose of our agency. And working with people, I know that people are not trying to be benefits hogs, and they definitely don't want to be on unemployment, especially the working age and able-bodied people. They want to be able to do what you said, Larkin, go home, feel good about themselves, provide for themselves and their families. That's not happening. But over 35 years, how could the city of Philadelphia, and that's only Philadelphia, we're talking this happened in every municipality all over the country. Look at some of the states that report where how many jobs they had and where they are now. 423,000 jobs in 76.
And you know, the
in 2016, 25,000 jobs, manufacturing jobs in the great city of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
You know, the loss of those jobs is more than just a loss of jobs. It also has to do with a loss of a revenue stream to the city, which puts them behind the eight ball as far as money is concerned. You take a look at Tredyffrin Township, Pennsylvania. It's one of the leading school districts in the country, and it's not 25 miles away from Philadelphia, but they've got a great solid tax base. It has a lot to do with the suburbs as opposed to the center city. But really, all of these manufacturing jobs have just disappeared. They've either gone to King of Prussia, or they've gone to New Jersey, or they've gone to Mexico.
70,000 companies that employed over 50, because between 5,500 or 5,000 have left the shores of the United States of America. And Larkin, you're a man who follows a lot of these political issues. Is there the person right now that could say, we could say, I'm going to call him up and ask him to be on the broadcast next week to tell us what they've been doing in the last 5 years to create more job opportunities in America? Do you know who that person is?
Mark Andel.
I have a couple suggestions.
Mark Andel's is the correct answer. Mark Andel is the correct answer.
You know, another flip side.
I thought you were looking for a politician.
We were, but there's no politician, so we have to go to the next non-politician.
You know, Larkin, mentioned like the lower page, you know, wages now $7. You can't find a worker. I met an interesting guy who was in my customer lounge. They were sitting waiting to have some work done, so they sit there. I went in and introduced myself, and he's an entrepreneur. He has 40 employees, construction. And he said, you know, Mark, I can't find anybody to work. And, you know, I hear that, and I talk about the skilled trades. Yeah, there's no training. He goes, no, I got too many things against me for what I pay my guy. He said, I got welfare against me. I got side cash jobs against me because they work for cash because they can't afford to run the business different ways. We got unemployment. We got people on compensation. We got other government assistance. So it was kind of a different angle. This guy said, I got five things against me, trying to find a worker always. And I think, Larkin, it ties with you where we need more than $7 per hour, but we don't need a fixed minimum wage. We need good, Mike, like you're talking, these manufacturing jobs back where it's good pay jobs. So we got to be able to pay these guys better than what they can sit home and get. But like you said too, Mike, most of the people you know want to work. They want to provide for their family.
Absolutely. I don't run across these agency hogs like so many people tell me. Oh, there are people that want this and they want that. I had a woman, by the way, I did answer the line a couple days ago, and she asked me, if this was the agency that offers the free telephone line, and I said, no, I said, but is there something else I could help you with? And she said, well, what is it? I said, do you need to go to a job fair or something like that? She closed the phone on me, slammed the phone. They want free everything. And when you give free, you're wonderful. You're always hunted. But when you ask for stability, how about feeding yourself, getting a job? How about getting into one of the job skill programs? How about registering for the welfare to work program? They're not interested in it.
Yes. And I think we're on a neat thing here because we need a culture change. We have to make sure the parents, guidance counselors, and make sure they know you've got to work for a living, become a provider, and you know they want to be able to do that, so we got to give them the tools to do that.
And the American people are seeing for themselves how important it is to make a positive statement where they shop. A lot of people, and I will see people on Saturday at the Christmas open house and also at the Vigilia on Sunday. Big amounts of people, listeners, people who go out and follow our example, people who honor your example, Mark, that you did this. A lot of people don't feel that they can do something like that, but they like knowing that there is someone like yourself in the system. People are telling me they talk to owners and give them an earful these days. But there's one thing that's very sad about the response they receive, and that is, Miss or sir, I would be glad to feature more American-made products if they were available from my suppliers.
You know, Michael,
How do we get to that point?
I want to say something, please, about a couple things here. I vehemently disagree with people who say to me that many people in the country, many of whom are on some form of government taxpayer dependency, that they don't want to work. I vehemently disagree. I don't believe that to be true. I think a lot about when Larkin said long time ago that all politics is local. You know, even with a big national election, one of the very exciting potential trickle-down effects of a big national election like we just had was its impact on local. You know, you asked, Michael, why did those jobs leave Philadelphia? And I want to be careful here because I love visiting the city, so I want to try to be objective here. I'd be willing to bet, guys, that the policies of the city of Philadelphia were the primary reason why those jobs left. Were there state policies that influenced it? Were there national policies? I'm sure there were. You know, I brought this point up before where Larkin said, well, you know, we have 38 Republican governors, and I make mention of these very openly progressive Democrat cities. They're either unaffordable to 90-plus percent of the country, or I wouldn't feel safe unless I had a bazooka on my shoulder walking around them. And, you know, Larkin, you're right about this point. There are many of those cities are in states run by Republican governors, and there's blame to go around. But the verdict is in. And the verdict is that if you want to help the inner cities, it all starts with free enterprise. It doesn't start with more dependency. It doesn't start with a one-party de facto Democrat tyranny, like the city of Baltimore, 70 years, 7-0 of nothing but Democrats in the city council. Look at cities around the country like San Francisco. San Francisco has the most expensive housing. I just saw an article recently talking about how their homeless population is surging. Okay, so more taxes, more government, more dependency. The verdict's in. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for the people as a whole. It doesn't. So I am excited, not excited about those problems. I'm excited that there can be a shift in thinking with a lot of people, Mark, and where when we think about politics being local, well, education's as good as any. Michael, you asked about what happened with education. Well, when education becomes bureaucratic and bloated and it's run at the national level like it has been, there's virtually no competition. So because there's no competition, everyone's just looking to, you know, milk the cow.
That's
as much
right.
As possible. They're just looking to milk the cow as much as possible, right? So that's because that system is in place the way that it is. I'm in Hallandale, Florida. Washington, D.C. doesn't know how to run education in Hallandale, just like it wouldn't know how to run it in Des Moines, Iowa, or St. Augustine, Florida, wherever city you want to point out. So if you want to get education on a more of a level where we're actually educating students, then you need to do away with all the inflated, bloated bureaucracy that is run from Washington, D.C. when it comes to education. And this is an idea whose time has come. Republican, Democrat, I believe there's for the reasonable Democrats, I believe there's a consensus here, which is to get the federal government out of the local schools and let people educate the kids locally, because what goes on in my city is different from what you guys need.
Gentlemen, I have to take a moment. Thank you, Rich. Those were very important words. And your little daughter, my granddaughter, and everybody else is, who's listening, who has family members ready to go to school, agrees that the state knows better and the local communities know better what is going on and what they need for their kids to be a success. Maybe that national level education is what took away our job skill training programs. I'd like to take this opportunity as we come closer to the Christmas holiday to acknowledge people who are daily sponsors of our broadcasts here on 860, and they include Leon Munkowski, attorney at law, Mr. Chester Kshanovsky, and everyone from Serena's Auto Body Shop, the Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, the PRCUA, America's oldest national fraternal organization, Mr. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, and Dr. Eva Maciak, a great dentist. For a great smile, contact Dr. Maciak. And also best wishes from everyone from Polka Deli for all your holiday needs. Remember, Polka Deli, 2719 East Allegheny Avenue. If you're planning to do some travel, the Polish American Travel Service is located in Port Richmond. And also, I want to acknowledge Mr. Martin Bednarek, who is the president of the Washington Savings Bank, and all of the staff from their five locations that are big supporters of the Buy American Made campaign. Also, Yolanda Konopacka-DeCipio, attorney at law, and the Polish National Alliance, Mr. Frank Spula, president. And I also want to say greetings to all of you from Pennsylvania Senator John Sabatina, as well as Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack, as well as State Representative John Taylor and State Representative Jean DiGirolamo. And also, may I take this opportunity, as you get ready to do some Christmas shopping, check Mark Andel out on the internet. Go to madeinamericastore.com and look at some of the items that he has there. He'll get them out to you in time for the Christmas holiday. But no matter what you're looking for, 365 days a year, remember Mark Andel and the Made in America store. It's linked right on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And may I encourage you to check out the sites on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and look at the U.S. debt clock. That's not something we put up there. That is statistics coming from the United States government. There are lots of other links of interest. You can also listen to rebroadcasts right from that front page. And also greetings to all from everyone from the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union, known as the PSFCU, and you can bank online no matter where you live. And if you're coming to Philadelphia, remember the Sugar House Casino, located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue, is there to welcome you 24 hours a day. You can also visit them at sugarhousecasino.com. Well, I'd like to return to our panel members. I want to say thank you to them again. These people are volunteers. They understand what it's all about. Businesses, Mark, I want you to know this. Business people are telling me that foreign-made items are not moving off the store shelves as they did in the past. People are becoming a little more on their own, thinking and looking for the labels. And I think the faster we get that American-made label highlighted and more people showing, like WeatherTech and the others, that they are made in America, the better it's going to be for America. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I agree. And it's a great way, great time of year to help your local shop or retail store, go to your smaller shops, and to help, you know, you got to remember the spider web effect, how many people you help with your dollars spent, not only that local, you know, supplier or the store, the retail store, but that manufacturer, the person putting that product together. There's such a spider web effect to how many people you can help with $1 spent. And at Christmas time is a great time to give back. And you give a job, really, and you secure a job by buying Made in America.
That's right. And we're talking every person who's listening. If you have family members and friends that are employed, be grateful for the job that they have. And if it is something that they're offering at local stores, spread the word to others, whether it's clothing or bakeries, the pizza shops, the hoagie shops. These are all local businesses that need your help. Shop local and make sure that you let the people know that you're a supporter of the Buy American Made campaign. When they put that little label, Dietz and Watson or whatever, that's an American Made label, because that's the hoagie is a great opportunity for you to enjoy something good and also support your local store. So make sure you go out of your way during this end of the fourth quarter of the year, because the businesses really need us. We all agree we're in a global economy. However, when you look at the real statistics, in a global economy should mean that we're represented equally throughout America and also throughout the world. Otherwise, American-made products are not properly represented in America's stores. And if we don't do something to change the situation, it'll never change. Larkin, closing remarks.
Yeah, closing remarks. I want to make a sour note here. Unfortunately, because of the final statistics are in, and only 58% of America voted in this last presidential election, I think it's a deplorable, upsetting remark that just typically shows how many or what percentage of this country is engaged in the everyday operation of this beautiful place that we live in. It's too bad. You know, maybe next go around will be better. But
it will, Mark. Mark, Rich, let's hear your final suggestions of the day.
I saw that, Larkin. We surpassed 2012, not 28. Hey, you know what? It ain't too early to get registered to vote.
Yes, I want to tell you. And by the way, everybody, I know I'll see you on Saturday and Sunday in Manayunk, but I have to tell you, there is a new president of the United States, and no matter who that president is, the American people have to hold that person accountable for the future of America. Until I meet you in my travels this weekend, until we have the opportunity to be together on Saturday's broadcast here at 11, or next Wednesday at 11 here on 860, when we'll hear some of Larkin's Christmas list, I wish you and yours the very best. Please go out and support your local businesses and make sure they know that you're looking for the Made in America label. Until we see each other, my very best. Thank you so much, Larkin, Rich, and Mark, and Henry Chaplinsky. My very best to all of you. Have a good one.
Have a great week, guys.